Hello, and welcome to the September podcast of the ISB's discussions on its insurance contracts project. My name is Andrea Pride, and I'm joined today by Daryl Scott, one of the board members. We've made some big decisions at this meeting, and I'd like to start with one which we've been trailing since the very beginning of the redeliberations, dealing with transition. The ED proposals were one of the biggest areas of disagreement that we had on the proposals in the exposure draft, and I think what we've done in this meeting is to make a significant concession to some of those concerns and come up with what I think might be a conceptually better answer in some ways.
Yeah, Andrea, I think the transition is always a difficult element when we're putting together new standards, because it requires, in a perfect world, a company to look back in time and to restate what's happened in their past in terms of the new standard. This becomes particularly difficult with insurance, because insurance has much longer dated contracts. And that has two effects. And the first effect is it means that the history that they bring over is potentially affected by the validity of data for a much longer period, but also going forward, the effect of any changes we make under the transitional requirements are likely to have an impact for a much greater period of time. The original ED proposed that we start at zero, that we actually reset the clock, if you like, from the date of transition. In the discussions that we had this week, what we've decided to do is instead to apply, at the first instance, our IAS 8 requirements. IAS 8 requires that you have a full retrospective look. So you go back as far as you absolutely can. IAS 8 then brings in an impracticability override, which says that if it is impracticable to go back, you then stop at the point in time at which that happens. We said that we would go back as far as that under the IS 8 requirements, but then because of the nature of insurance and because of the long-dated requirement of these contracts, we've added an additional element. So we said, in addition to going back that far, we would allow you to go back even further to the extent that you have information that you can use to estimate. And we override one of the conditions in IS 8, specifically the condition that the information that you use be objective. So we allow, in essence, an insurance company to use whatever information they have at hand to go back further in time. Once they reach the end of that, once they've gone back as far as they can with that information, IS 8 kicks in again. And what IS 8 says at this point is, when you've gone back as far as you can, you use your previous accounting methodology to produce your opening statement. Now, transition in the case of insurance companies is primarily about the residual margin. So this would apply to the way the insurance company determines its residual margin at the very beginning period, estimates it for a period of time beyond that, and then when they fall within the IAS 8, actually do a full recalculation of the residual margin.
Yes, and I think it's important to emphasise that in that estimation period, we're asking people to maximise the use of whatever objective information that they do have, and we expect that most insurance companies will have some objective information from the past. Our proposals also require us to know the locked-in discount rate for a contract for a number of things, partly to work out what the residual margin is, but also for the decisions on presenting changes in discount rate to OCI. So to work out that that amount in OCI that needs to be there on transition, we came up with some practical expedients.
And again, we have the same issue here, that you would need to go right back as far as the beginning period that you're starting from. So the transition requirements, or the transition reliefs that we've granted in this space, relate very much to what we heard during the exposure draft process, and that was that insurers could find some of the objective rates we were looking for, but find it difficult to make the specific adjustments we required, adjustments for things like illiquidity premiums or specific issues relating to the asset that they needed to remove. What we've granted in terms of relief here is to say that the insurers still need to use as a base point or a starting point the rates that they can objectively determine, a risk-free rate or a corporate rate that they would use as a starting point, but that the adjustment that they need to make to that rate can be determined by reference to the current adjustments they're making.
And then, as you'd expect, of course, we are asking for a reasonable amount of disclosures around the transition adjustments, because we know that this transition adjustment is going to have an effect in financial statements of insurers for very many years into the future.
And I think the board thought that was really important. In essence, we are allowing a fair amount of estimation to happen in this space. We believe that estimation is appropriate given the long dated, but we also think it's then very important that users understand how those estimates were arrived at, what judgments were made, and how those impact on the numbers.
Okay, so that was the bulk of the joint sessions with the FESB, and we also covered off one of the sweep issues, really, which is how you deal with acquisition costs in the pre-coverage period. Moving on to the IASB's own discussions on its insurance contracts projects, we had some other areas where we largely confirmed things that we proposed in the exposure draft, in particular the accretion of interest on the residual margin using a locked-in discount rate, and the disclosure package, where we had a bit of a discussion about the need for a regulatory restriction-type disclosure. But in the end, the board decided, although it could see the attractions of such disclosure, it wasn't really a sort of thing they could deal with in a project that is really only about insurance contracts, even if insurance entities are particularly regulated compared to others. But the topic that we has been heavily trailed in some ways, and the people are anxiously waiting to hear the outcome of, is the decision to re-expose our proposals.
Generally speaking, we consider re-exposure or otherwise right at the end once we've made all the decisions. But you're right, we've heard many people asking us about whether or not we're going to re-expose, trying to get an understanding of our re-exposure timetable. And it's because people need to plan around what they think the outcome's going to be. They need to start making or deciding on when their project plans are going to start for the implementation. So we felt it was really important to bring this decision forward a little bit in order to give that sort of certainty to our constituents. I say bring it forward a little bit, really there's not too much left, and we'll talk about that a little bit under the next step. But there are still some decisions we need to make. In considering this, the board was both aware of the fact that this project has gone on for a very long time, that there's a fairly urgent desire for us to get a standard out in this space. We're also very cognizant of the fact that we've had a lot of very good feedback in the past from our constituents, feedback that's gone into the process and that we've used to actually come to the answers that we've got. And we didn't want to necessarily put our constituents through the process of another extensive exposure draft unless it was really necessary. The answer we've come up with is to go for exposure draft because we believe it is necessary given the changes and the decisions we've made, but to make it a targeted exposure draft, to make sure that we are only addressing the questions that the board believes are particularly important to have answered. So we would argue that the base model really has been decided, and the base model has stayed consistent for a period of time, and a lot of the decisions we took were tinkering with that base model but not actually changing the underlying. There were a couple of significant decisions, though, that we have taken that we believe we need to get answers on. I kind of run through those decisions. They are the decision to unlock the residual margin, which we believe will have a fairly significant impact, and which we believe, although we were asked about, people need to have the opportunity to consider. The decision to introduce mirroring for participating contracts, the decision to reflect premium income on the face of the income statement, and of course the decision to report certain parts of the fair value movements in liabilities through OCI. Those were the core four decisions that we'd taken prior to coming into this week that we felt would need to be tested through an ED process. In addition to that, we've just spoken about transition, and we think transition will have a fairly significant effect in terms of the way companies think about the model as a whole. And so we want to test that as part of the process too. So the exposure draft that we'll release will really focus on those 5 points. It will be the entire exposure draft, so people will be able to understand the context in which they're seeing these topics. But it'll focus there in terms of the questions we ask.
Okay, and in terms of those next steps then, Daryl, I think we're thinking that we will have to be doing some discussions into October, November. We still have to review the participating contracts. We have to discuss the presentation of premiums in the Statement of Comprehensive Income. And so there's still some topics that need, you know, a reasonable amount of board time to discuss. And I think we're always quite aware of our constituents' busy seasons coming up in the first part of any year as well. So what would you say would be a realistic time to expect us to see an exposure draft?
I think you're right in saying there are a couple of really important decisions we've still got to make, and that those decisions are going to take a bit of time, and obviously at this stage of the project we want to make sure we're getting all these decisions right. I think it's also important to say that the decision we've taken around transition, which is a fairly complicated transition process, and the decision we've taken to re-expose, both affect the timeline in terms of when we expect to actually be able to get an exposure draft out there. The exposure draft decision in itself, because it requires us to make sure that we've thought about and given our constituents enough information to understand why we've made the decisions we have and what the alternatives were that we considered, places a bit of additional emphasis on the drafting process. So I think at the moment it's fair to say that we would be targeting the first half of 2013. And I think it's probably also safe to say at this stage that people with December year ends anyway, won't need to think about the exposure draft during the period that they're preparing their financials.
Okay, well, thanks very much, and I look forward to our next podcast in October. Bye.
Bye.